3:18 p.m. on Friday, May 1st, here in the Anchorage Legislative Information Office Denali Conference Room. We are operating via a teleconference today in order to practice good physical distancing. So I'm going to do the roll call over the phone for committee members and then ask if any other representatives are on the line. All right. Is Vice Chair Streets online? Representative Streets? Representative Hannon?
Here in Juneau.
All right. Representative Gillis? Representative Story?
Representative Streets?
I'm sorry?
Representative Hannon?
Hannon? Yeah, this is Story.
Representative Gillis?
All right, here, just a moment. I'm going to take a brief IDs. All right. We're going to go back to the roll call. Next up, we have Representative Rasmussen. Representative Fields?
Here.
Hello. Are there any other representatives on the line?
Yeah. Andy Josephson.
Representative Fields. Good afternoon. Representative Josephson.
Rep. Ortiz.
Representative Ortiz, and anybody else? Looks like we might have Representative Drummond as well. All right, and with that, I'm myself, Representative Sponholz. I'll let the record reflect.
Harriet Drummond.
Hi, Harriet, how are you? Representative Drummond. I'll let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks to the committee members for participating via teleconference. Because we are meeting remotely right now, if you can keep your phones on mute until you need to speak, that will help keep the live stream for the public as clear as possible. And I want to thank, before we get started with the committee business, Sophia Tenney, the Labor and Commerce Secretary from House Records, and Carson Walters from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee day down in Juneau. And then I also want to thank Johan Timmers here in the Anchorage LIO for staffing the logistics of the committee here in Anchorage. Today we have a presentation from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development focused on their efforts to help respond to the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and the public health measures that we've instituted to protect against the spread of COVID-19. We're going to hear a presentation from Commissioner Julie Anderson and many of her staff. I want to just note, in addition to Commissioner Anderson, we'll hear from Division Director Sarah Chambers of the Corporation Business and Professional Licensing Division, and then Division Director Lori Wing-Heyer of the Insurance Division. We also have, for questions online, Deputy Commissioner John Springsteen, Assistant Commissioner Amy Demboski, Division Director Patrice Walsh of Banking and Securities, Division Director Glenn Klinkart of AMCO, and the Deputy Director of Economic Development, Jim Anderson, all for questions in case we need them. So thank you very much, Commissioner Anderson and team, for joining us today. We know that these are all trying times for the state of Alaska. We also know that your team has been working very hard over the last couple of months to try to quickly respond to the COVID-19 disaster. We know that you've also had a big day, that you spent a couple of hours this morning with House Finance, and just want to respect your time. With that, I want to go ahead and ask you to introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Sponholz and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Julie Anderson. I am the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Is everyone able to hear me okay?
You are just a little bit muffled, Commissioner.
I will take it off speaker. So, thank you, and if you have any problems, please don't hesitate to speak up if you're not able to hear me.
You are still just a little bit muffled.
Is this better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I am here today to talk about actions taken by our department in response to the COVID-19 crisis as well as future plans. And as the chair had mentioned, I have several of my team members online with me to help answer any questions as we move through this presentation. The governor declared the public health disaster emergency declaration for COVID-19 on March 11, 2020, and initiated a unified command structure between the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Military and Veterans Affairs, and Public Safety, and fully engaged state departments to utilize all capabilities to ensure a swift and effective COVID-19 response. Our department began fully participating with unified command and providing assistance where needed. We all acknowledge the critical nature of this response to ensure the safety of Alaskans, and we are fortunate that as Alaskans, we are all pulling together to address this pandemic. At the same time that the department was aware of the impact that the COVID-19 pandemic was having on our economy, we knew it was going to be a primary issue and to result, to address the COVID-19 responses. And next slide. Do I need to say that as we're moving forward, by the way?
Yeah, if you just mention that you want next slide, then the staff can do that.
Okay, great. When the pandemic first became a real concern for Alaska, one of the first actions our office took was compiling and submitting the disaster declaration request to the Small Business Administration on behalf of the governor. We worked very closely with the Small Business Administration, compiled the request packet in a matter of hours, and had approval within about 3 days.
Commissioner, one moment.
Yes.
I'm going to take a brief at ease here.
Okay. Okay, thank you. The SBA's approval of that request is what opened the Economic Injury Disaster Loan and Advances Program for Alaskan businesses. We have worked alongside the SBA since the disaster declaration to ensure we stay on top of loan opportunities and current statistics for the existing programs like the Paycheck Protection Program or the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. More information on these two programs is provided on the next slide. Throughout the COVID-19 crisis, my team in the Commissioner's office has been working long hours to communicate the different funding options available to local businesses and to track how the different communities and industries are doing through this pandemic. Since February, we have been communicating consistently with mayors, city and borough managers, businesses, industries, other state of Alaska departments, and we are working with various agencies and other states to develop programs to help residents, small business, and industries. We all are also working with state and federal partners on coordination for economic mitigation and recovery programs and funds. As you are all aware, I am also a member of the ADA board, and I determined my focus needed to be on finding or developing more funding options for Alaskans and to focus on critical infrastructure workforce issues. I assigned my assistant commissioner, Amy Domboski, to work directly with the Unified Command. She has been assisting them on many issues around health mandates, including assisting in the development and the framework process for the Critical Infrastructure Business Protocol Plan. She has also been very diligent ensuring our divisions have a direct line to Unified Command and vice versa. As you'll see on this slide, our Department Public Information Officer is a member of the Unified Command Public Information Officer team. This has helped to ensure all departments are in alignment on messaging. The PIO's main focus has been to promote alternative ways to support business
through this pandemic while complying with all the health mandates. We have issued press releases. The Department of Public Safety created a quick 30-second video for us. The governor's office created a couple of videos on ways restaurants have altered their operations to continue business. And I have shared an op-ed piece with news organizations across the state last month. Our office is fielding hundreds of questions via phone and email relating to business, health mandates, and travel restrictions. This is an ongoing effort that has our leadership responding to the public, business, and industry representatives 7 days a week and often into the late evening hours. We do take our role of serving the public seriously, and we are making every effort to be responsive and timely in all inquiries coming into our office. I just want to add that it's when we're listening to all these people that are affected by this mandate and the impact that it's having on business, it's very concerning, and we're welcoming this opportunity to talk with you today to understand your concerns and find a way to work together to help solve these problems. Next slide. The first round of COVID-19 appropriated funding for SBA's Paycheck Protection Program and disaster loans has run out. So they are no longer, well, as of the writing of this, they were no longer accepting new applications. At this point, they have put new funding in place and are continuing to take applications. As of the April 16th, with the first tranche of funding, we had 4,842 Alaskans receiving this Paycheck Protection Program funding, and we had one Alaskan receiving the Economic Injury and Disaster Loan Program. But I just have news from the SBA that with the reappropriation, the SBA has now, as of April 29th, this is not just Alaska statistics, but across the nation, approved 960,000 3P loans totaling nearly $90 billion of the $321 billion in newly appropriated funds. We have been communicating with lending institutions, with small businesses, and others to make sure that people are utilizing these tools so that we can get funds into Alaskans' hands as quickly as possible. We have also worked closely with various industry associations and the CPA and accounting firms and the SBA to ensure we have accurate and timely information available for Alaska's businesses. We participate regularly on phone calls with the Small Business Administration to ensure that we're doing everything we can to help Alaskans with these access to these funds. Next slide. Additionally, one of the first actions of the Alaska Development Team was to create the COVID-19 Economic Recovery Resource Portal for business. As you'll see on this slide, this website covers information on the tools at the state and federal level to help Alaskan businesses deal with the effects of the pandemic. This site is updated as new tools become available. The website includes information on the different programs available through the Small Business Administration, the Division of Economic Development Investments within my department, and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. It also includes latest news, contact information for economic development organizations around the state, and links to additional resource pages. Our intent is to make this a one-stop shop for all people in Alaska, businesses or individuals alike, to get information on how to access the tools to help them with their economic recovery. Next slide. The Division of Economic Development Investments administers and services 10 revolving loan funds for the department. These loan funds were established long before the pandemic began, which allowed us to offer some immediate relief funding for businesses. Three of the division's revolving loan funds are specifically designed to work with small and micro businesses, loans which can be made for working capital. As you will see on the slide, there are the Small Business Economic Development Loan Fund, the Rural Development Initiative Fund, and the Alaska Microloan Fund. To support Alaskan businesses as best we can, the division is working with the U.S. Economic Development Administration to obtain a $5 million grant to recapitalize the Small Business Development Loan Fund. ADA has agreed to provide the $1 million match for this grant. The investment section also administers the Commercial Fishing Loan Program, which is designed to assist fisheries and commercial fishing operations around the state. The investment staff has been fielding a large number of inquiries from Alaskans, as you can imagine. They have been providing information about their programs, as well as the Paycheck Protection Program, the USDA Loan Programs, General Economic Development Council Programs, and the ADA Programs.
Chair Sponholz?
Yes? Is that Representative Hannon?
I do have a question about this slide, so I don't know if we want to wait till we're done with the presentation or...
No, we'll go ahead and take questions as they come. Thanks. Do you have a question?
I do. So, through the chair, Commissioner, I've been contacted by a couple of constituents who currently are loan holders from both the Rural Development Initiative Fund and the Small Business Economic Development Fund. And their questions have to do with the expected payments on that right now, and whether the department is going to give them some forbearance on currently owed payments on those loans, and what kind of communications they should expect from the department on those loans.
Thank you. Through the chair, I will have Jim Anderson. He's the division director for the investments, and he can answer that. I will tell you that he and his team have been working with existing loan holders and new clients to address these issues. So, Jim, would you like to respond?
Yes, Commissioner. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, this is Jim Anderson with Division of Economic Development. Absolutely. I would encourage your constituents, they can contact me directly. We're currently working with hundreds of Alaskans who have these same kind of concerns, and we'd be happy to take a look at their situation and be able to work on a loan restructure that can get them through this time.
So, Chair Sponholz, a follow-up? So, Mr. Anderson, just to clarify, the loan recipients need to make contact with you and ask for forbearance. In both cases, these are seasonal, tourism-dependent businesses. In one case, the constituent is 18 years into a 20-year loan. Their expectation is now they will have zero income this summer because they've had 90% cancellations. But it is... they need to contact you and ask for consideration of extension of the loan or forbearance on the loan. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Cannon, that is correct. Each situation with each business is different. And so what we want to do is be able to restructure the loan to give them the best chance of success. And if they are seasonal, what we're finding is that we can restructure the loan so that payment is not due until after they've had another full season under their belt. So there is a minimal amount of information that we do need to be able to make those decisions. And so if they contact us, there's no cost, but any fees for any kind of a restructure have been waived. If they contact us, we'll work with them and restructure the loan to give them the best chance of success.
Okay. And then my final follow-up, Madam Chair, would be simply, Mr. Anderson, how do they contact you? Do you have a phone number and email that you would share?
Yes, they can contact us on our 800 number, 1-800-478-5626, and just ask for a loan officer, and we would be happy to help them.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Deputy Jecker, I have a follow-up question to that. How many loans like this do you have, and how many loan officers do you have on staff currently?
Currently on staff, we have We have 7 loan officers, and we have about 2,000 loans and that we're currently administering. We also are in the process of hiring 3 new officers.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee or other representatives on the line right now? All right, I just want to note that Representative Gillis joined us at 3:28. Welcome, Representative Gillis.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, Representative Hall.
Uh-huh.
This is Representative Story. I had a follow-up question.
All right, go ahead.
Yes, the volume of calling in, what is the approximate wait time most applicants can expect? When they call in, yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Story, you were a little bit garbled there. I believe what you asked was what is the wait time to receive a loan under the program currently?
To clarify, that is actually an excellent question. What's the average turnaround time for businesses when they apply to time when they are given funds? But I was wondering, since there's a high volume of people calling in, are they able to get in right away? Do they leave their name and number? Or how often, what is the wait time that they face?
Through the chair, Representative Story, the wait time is a matter of minutes generally before they get a return call. It's 15 minutes or so at the most is what people have been experiencing so far. If we receive all of the information that is needed, we can generally process a request in about 14 to 21 days or sooner, depending on how responsive the applicant is.
Thank you.
So, Deputy Commissioner Anderson, is it your division that administers the commercial fishing loan program?
To the chair, yes.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Representative Bonholz, could I ask you a question, even though I'm not on the committee?
Go ahead, Representative Ortiz.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for being here today. Jim, is your department going to have a handle or have a hand in distributing the $100 million that is slated to come to Alaska for, quote, the fishing, I think it's called fishing industry relief or something along that line? There's, I'm not sure if that's the correct phrase, but I know that there's $100 million slated right now. And will your department have a handle and have a hand in distributing that money?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I believe that Commissioner Anderson would be in the best position to speak on that.
Thank you. And through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that economic stimulus for Alaskan fisheries, the $100 million, I believe is what you're speaking to.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, that distribution is currently under discussion as to how it's going to be administered. The last that I had heard, the state was still working with the National Marine Fisheries Service to understand how it's going to be distributed. I believe early on they were debating having it administered through Northwest Marine Fisheries Commission or something similar. And so we of course are advocating that it would be more helpful for Alaskans to distribute Alaskan funds. But as of this point, I do not know the answer to that question. But I can get more up-to-date information and respond if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Absolutely. All right, Commissioner?
Thank you. So we'll move on to the next slide. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or AIDA, created the Sustaining Alaska's Future Guarantee Program, the AK SAFE program is what we're calling it, to provide guarantees to banks and financial institutions for up to $1 million per borrower. Alaska Safe will enable banks and financial institutions to advance additional loan funds to their borrowers. Under this program, ADA will provide a loan guarantee of up to $1 million per borrower in collaboration with Alaska's banks and financial institutions. The objective of the program is to immediately provide additional capital to Alaska businesses that can be used for any working capital business. All Alaskan businesses impacted by the COVID-19 disaster with an existing secured loan agreement are eligible. Businesses should work with their lending institution to access these guaranteed loans. In addition to the ADA's AK Safe program, the ADA board established the Emergency Loan and Guarantee Program. This program will provide emergency loans to qualified businesses and nonprofit organizations. This program is intended to complement the federal emergency loan program, such as the 3P and the EIDL. The intent is that people that could not access the SBA loan program would be able to utilize this program. The ADA board also adopted temporary emergency regulations to enable the authority to provide direct relief to Alaskan businesses suffering the economic effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, such as waiving or modifying requirements associated with interest rates, costs and fees, loan financing terms and conditions, and underwriting requirements.
Commissioner?
Yes.
I have a question on the small business relief. There's $290 million in small business relief coming from the federal government courtesy of the CARES Act. And one of the things that we heard last Friday in this committee from organizations that are working with businesses across the state of Alaska was that loans were not an ideal solution to some of the financial problems that many small businesses are facing because they won't be able to pay back those loans with sort of uncertain revenue for some time into the future, and that for some businesses in particular, it might be that grants would make more sense. Is your department considering grants to small businesses in particular at all?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I don't know which representative is speaking.
It is the chair that asked the question, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. That's a good question, and I'm glad that you raised that. when we began looking at designing loan programs to meet the needs of those that couldn't access the SBA program, we were operating on the previous federal guidance. Now that we've had the new guidance, we are looking at incorporating into this emergency loan program a forgiveness clause that is similar to the Paycheck Protection Program, so that we could forgive a significant amount of the loan, and we would ultimately that part of the loan would be a grant, because we do understand the needs of all of the businesses through Alaska, and especially in rural Alaska, where it's, people are having a very difficult time. So, as I stated, we also have Alan Weissner on the line from ADA that is available to talk further in detail about these programs. But our goal is to implement a program that can provide a combination of loan and grant programs.
What's the timing on updating the provisions of those loans so that there can be a forgiveness provision? I think that we need to get that established as quickly as possible, and then get that information distributed widely so that folks in the small business community understand that that's an option.
Yes, I agree with that. And Alan, are you on the line? You want to talk about where we are with the RFP process?
I am on the line. Thank you, Commissioner and Representative Spunholz. This is Alan Weissner. I'm the Chief Investment Officer for ADA. We are currently working with the Commissioner and through ADA to have issued a request for proposals from Alaska's financial institutions, the banks, and credit unions on ways of implementing this direct lending program. We're in the middle of that process right now, and we are trying to determine out the specific terms of the program. As Commissioner Anderson highlighted, there have been changes that are being adopted to it. It seems every day there's some new information that needs to be incorporated into it. We are anticipating by next week, having that determined, and then be able to implement a program within the next 2 weeks to be able to announce to Alaska's businesses. Thank you.
That is very good news, Mr. Weinzer. What members of the business community have you been, or organizations representing businesses, have you been working with to gather sort of input on the development of that process?
To the chair, this is Alan Weisner. What we have addressed is specifically talking with financial institutions as a primary vehicle in understanding what the current demand is, needs, requirements. We also have individually been speaking directly with Alaskan businesses and understanding what their requirements. One of the examples that we have given in an earlier committee presentation is highlighting that with the Alaska Safe Guarantee Program, we have had direct conversations with over 100 Alaska businesses and what their requirements are and needs, and been looking at adopting that. And what I would highlight is that the results of this program have come from that feedback in identifying areas that just don't seem to be currently addressed for Alaska's businesses, and specifically the seasonality of those businesses and how that isn't being matched by the federal program. Thank you.
I have a question. This is Zach Fields.
I'm going to follow up my question, and then I'll call on Representative Fields. Have you been working with local economic development organizations, or, you know, the Center for Economic Development, or other organizations that have been working with small businesses across the state to develop that program?
To the chair, this is Alan Weisner. We have been working with the Department of Commerce and Jim Anderson, specifically with his Small Business Economic Development Loan Program, but we have not been talking directly with the Community Economic Development Councils.
Madam Chair, this is Commissioner Anderson. Could I add to that?
Go ahead.
Our team, through the Alaska Development Team, is in contact with the economic development organizations, as is Director Moeller with Committee on Retail Affairs. In addition to that, we work closely with John Bittner at the Small Business Development Center and the Center for Economic Development, as well as many other organizations throughout the state. We participate in phone calls on a regular basis. We are obtaining feedback on the issues from those organizations, as well as many individuals that are calling and emailing us on a daily basis requesting assistance. As I mentioned at the earlier committee hearing,
Commissioner, you are cutting in and out as you're speaking. I'm not sure if you're on speakerphone.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. As I stated, people in Alaska are in dire need, and we want to help them. We believe this program will go a long ways towards achieving that goal, and we are listening to all of the effective businesses people throughout the state. I would also like to add one other thing in regards to this program. We are doing a rural set-aside to ensure that people in rural Alaska that may be disadvantaged in accessing these loans because of the time that it takes to prepare applications, and they may not have fully supported internet capabilities, etc. We're making sure that we allow people in rural Alaska the time to prepare their applications and access this money without having to be in competition with people that, you know, that have very sophisticated telecommunication systems. So our goal is that these funds reach all of Alaska and all sectors. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Fields had a question?
Yeah, I do. It seems like the department is only channeling about $750,000 in grants through ARTRs, and I guess it just seems kind of illogical to me that the department is effectively standing up another forgivable loan program, which in many ways is similar to the PPP. The difference being, because you're designing a new program, there's this lag time. I think there's a degree of uncertainty about the competitiveness of the rates that you're going to be able to offer. But on a fundamental level, why would we focus so much on a loan program of questionable forgiveness? I hope that the forgiveness, in fact, works out, But why do that when you have clear legislative authority to issue grants? And, you know, there are a lot of businesses that are not going to have an entire season of revenue. So, you know, a loan, especially under the federal structure, I mean, there's no business. So the loan just doesn't make a lot of sense. These businesses still have ultimately utilities they're going to have to pay. They've got rents they're ultimately going to have to pay, even if they can't be evicted today. And I guess I'm just kind of confused about why the department is not more aggressively using the authority that the legislature gave it in Senate Bill 241, especially since, you know, the department wrote that language in the amendment that me and Representative Bonholz and a bunch of other representatives put into that bill. So if you could address why is there such a tiny sum of money going out in grants, and given that you have that clear authority now, and, you know, if you wish, you could disperse those grants through the ARTRs, which might, you know, have a better understanding of their local business needs. Why not do that now and get the money on the street as fast as possible?
Through the chair to Representative Fields. This is Commissioner Anderson. We are working with the new federal guidance to design this emergency loan program to meet those needs. The difficulty here is that we're trying to make sure that we responsibly direct these funds to entities that are viable entities that are going to use these funds as they were intended to offset COVID-19 expenses. So by standing this up through this program that was already under development and putting in provisions to basically forgive the loan based on certain criteria, this will, in essence, be a granting avenue that we can utilize, and we can utilize quickly, and we can get it to all areas of the state in a very responsible manner that we can then report back to the legislature. And the $750,000 that was recently appropriated through the governor's new response funding decision is, I think, an excellent idea. I think it'll be very helpful to be able to work with the ARTRs, to have them work within the community to help people prepare for these loans, and it won't be just this loan, but other loans. I think just working together in a cooperative way to get these funds into the hands of the people in Alaska as quickly as possible is our goal, and I believe that's the ARTRs' goal as well. So we're very excited about the opportunity to work with them on this.
Okay, follow-up. I guess I would just note $750,000 is a tiny sum of money, and to me it doesn't make sense that setting up a whole new program, which structurally is very similar to a federal program, would be faster than using clear legislative authority we've already provided that was designed to tap that CARES Act funding. The other thing I would note is, you know, I've heard from a lot of small businesses that they've had an extremely hard time working with their financial institutions to tap PPP. I suspect you're going to have a similar challenge tapping state funds. That is especially true for a small business that maybe, you know, has a bank account with a local bank or credit union. But, you know, let's say they're with Wells Fargo. Good luck getting PPP help through Wells Fargo if you're not a huge business. So, I mean, you know, some of the banks in reality, our small businesses are simply not going to be able to use. My staff called around, and Northrim Bank was actually the only one that was helping people who didn't have existing loans out there. So I think, you know, it just gets back to the inherent limitations of loans. I mean, forgivable loans are great, but they're not a panacea. And one of the reasons is you're establishing more intermediaries, and, you know, in some cases, you're particularly for very small businesses, they're going to have a hard time getting particularly, you know, an international bank like Wells Fargo to prioritize them when from the bank's perspective, they have more important customers out there. And, again, that just gets back to the ARTRs actually know what's on the ground, and, you know, they would be cognizant of, oh, this business is actually really important in our local community, even if that business is a tiny client, you know, in the portfolio of a giant international bank.
Through the chair, Representative Fields. I understand your concerns. That was our concern as we were putting together this program. part of the RFP process that Alan Weissner is managing through ADA is addressing those. We sent the request for proposals to all financial institutions within the state of Alaska, both the banks and the credit unions. We're in the process of reviewing those proposals now, and one of the key elements of evaluation is to ensure a very quick and timely application process so that people across Alaska can access these funds quickly. So we'll have more information to provide on that program, those respondents, next week, as Alan had indicated. But I share your concern. That's why we wanted to make sure we have a very streamlined process. We also are limiting the program to those that were not able to access the SBA funds. And additionally, we also plan on, as I stated earlier, having a set aside for rural Alaska. We are taking all of your concerns into consideration. We want to be able to have easy access and allow people to go through the process in a very timely manner.
Okay. I do have one more question. Maybe it's easiest to just ask it now, given the challenges of the teleconference. So it looks to me like out of the $300 million allocated to DCCED and the RPL, between $150 and $250 million is allocated for ADA in this emergency loan guarantee program. What's happening with the rest of those funds?
So are you looking at the latest revised?
Yeah, if I understood it correctly, that yes.
That May 1, yes. So my understanding is and I just got this hot off the press probably the same time you did, is the $750,000 will go from DCCED to the ARDRs, and the remaining funds will be allocated to the different programs that we have within ADA and our department with the Division of Investments. They haven't specified how much those were, but our intent is we're going to utilize the most effective vehicle to get those funds out quickly and at the lowest possible cost. So as we were talking about the RFP process, one of the other key elements that we're judging these proposals on is the cost to provide this program to the residents of Alaska, because basically they will be utilizing ADA funds, and through this the federal grant funds, and that will go directly to the consumer. So our goal is to minimize those costs. We, as I said, we'll have better understanding. Our goal is to beat what the SBA had in their cost structure, and I think we can achieve that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So
Chair Spahnholz?
Yes, Representative Hannah?
Yes, I have a question for ADA.
Go ahead.
So through the chair, Mr. Weissner, I'm wondering whether ADA has the capacity or has contemplated the segment of the Alaska business economy of the cannabis industry that is not able to use an Alaska bank because of banking laws. And I've heard, again, from some constituents who have asked whether there is any assistance from them or if everything is being restricted through use through a current bank, therefore they're not eligible because they're not using banks.
Through the chair, this is Alan Weissner. We have, and the RFP that we issued is a public document, and we're happy to share that RFP. Within that, we highlighted for the respondents to let us know their capabilities in addressing the cannabis industry as one of those parties for loan support. We are looking at ultimately the responses that are coming back, and with the definition of the program, we'll know better once we've evaluated all that information. I think you're, from my viewpoint, I think you're highlighting an element that may need to be separately addressed through another program or some other direction that directly addresses that industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for having addressed it partially through your RFP and acknowledging it, because it's one of those that kind of lays out there and we sometimes defer and then forget we're putting a barrier in front of some businesses. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. So I have a couple of questions on this topic. With the RFP process for the AK Safe program, is that going to allow for multiple lenders to be able to participate and administer the program, or are you expecting that one lender is going to be capable of providing service to the entire state?
Through the chair, this is Alan Weissner. We are looking ultimately to get, we want to have one or more financial institutions that are being involved. And that ultimately comes down to how we're able to arrange it at the lowest cost in providing the funding to Alaska's businesses and nonprofit organizations. The intent of any allocation or definition of a specific program operator, as we've defined it within the RFP, is to ensure that they are providing full access, as Commissioner Anderson had highlighted, to the entire state. So that is the top priority. If there is the definition of one institution, we will ensure that that top priority has been obtained, is identified, because it has to give equal access across the state of Alaska, because the impact has been so broadly across the state. The other conditions that we have in there is trying to identify subsectors, as Commissioner Ander identified, for specific rural community involvement, to ensure that if they have a delayed response or ability to access the communication elements of the program, that we have a subset of the funding that's allocated for it specifically for rural communities, and they have a process that enables them to gain equal access with other parties. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And then for Commissioner Anderson, what's your plan for distributing the ARDR funds? How do you expect the distribution?
I have to tell you, we just received this amount and notification today, so I will work with Director Moeller, Community and Regional Affairs, and we can get back to you on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that, as Representative Fields referenced, this is $750,000 for the entire state, and that money is just not going to go very far. And so that's one of my concerns with that particular allocation. I understand not wanting to create redundancies, but we want to make sure that we have as many, experts and folks who understand the businesses and their communities involved as possible. So I think that's really important. And then just one note for the record, the governor does not appropriate funds. He makes budget requests to the legislature, and the legislature makes appropriations. So, all right, you want to proceed forward with your presentation?
Yes. Thank you. At this point, on the next slide, we're moving to the Division of Insurance, and Division Director Lori Wingheyer is on the line to walk us through this. Lori?
You know what? Before we move on to Director Wingheyer, I just want to take a brief moment to ask if any of the other legislators on the line have any questions before we move off this topic. All right. Director Wingheyer, it looks like you're up next.
Good afternoon, Representative. I'm sorry, this is a story, and I keep having trouble getting my mute off of my phone. Sorry. I was
a story.
Thank you. Through the chair, Dr. Anderson, I was wondering if you had an idea of the amount of loan requests that were not able to be fulfilled. And I'm hoping the things we've just been talking about, that these have been the gaps of those that were not filled. Are these the gap areas that we are looking to address in these future efforts that you have just described?
Through the chair, Representative Story, that was a little bit difficult to understand. So rephrase that. Are you asking... do we know how many people were not able to access SBA programs?
Yes. Through the chair, yes.
So, through the chair, Representative Story, we do not have that data. We do know that there was difficulties with both the 3P program and the economic injury. That's their loan program for Alaskans to get access, because there was so many people requesting those funds, and nationally there was quite a few problems with that. And now they're in the second phase of requesting those SBA loan programs. So we don't know the number, but what we are telling, we will be telling once we get this program out the door, is that we are available. We all we need is to know that if you tried to access the SBA loan programs and weren't able to, you know, we're able to help you. In addition, we also, as Jim has stated, we have the Division of Investments available to help people get access to working capital now. So I think it's important that people know that they don't have to wait, that we have many avenues that we can go to help them. Was there another part of that question that I missed, Representative Stewart?
Thank you. Through the chair, follow-up? Yes. So what I hear you saying is, you know, many businesses were not able to get through. You don't have, or the ones from hearing from the lenders, I guess, from what were the problems, why the ones who did get through, why their loans were turned down. I was wondering if you had, did you have any information on that?
Through the chair, Representative Story, no, we have not gotten any statistics on that. I could contact our local SBA representative. She's been very, very accommodating, working with us and providing statistics as she gets them, but I do not know that number, but we can follow up on that.
Thank you. I were particularly wondering if they were giving you any information about why people were being turned down and those gaps needed to be filled by your department as you move forward. So,
through the chair, Representative Story, I will talk to SBA about that. I imagine it could be for a variety of reasons. And through our program, what we're just asking them is to just verify that they tried to either access the funds and weren't able, or for some reason they were denied or unable to get to be able to participate in those SBA loan programs. Mm-hmm. And
one more follow-up, please. Yes, I was listening to an earlier committee meeting today, and please verify if I heard right. I was wondering if there could be a list of those businesses that were successful in getting loans, if that is available. And I thought I heard you say that you had to check if that was a confidential issue or not.
Through the chair, Representative Story, we don't have that information on the SBA loans. And what I was referring to is, if you needed information from the loan programs that we administer, I would have to check with law to see if we can release those names. But the SBA is a federal program, and we don't have any insight into their data.
Follow up. So we will have information on who was successful in getting these current loans we're talking about now. What business?
You mean there's a follow-up report in the future? Is that what you're requesting?
Through the chair, I was just saying, so it sounds like we will have a list of who is successful in getting these idea grants.
I believe the commissioner said that she needed to check with the Department of Law about sharing, about whether or not she could share names, but I think that you know, there are some issues of confidentiality there. I'm not sure that if I had a business loan, I would necessarily want the public to know that, but I think that it certainly would be interesting to know, you know, how many loans were made, how, you know, the total value of those loans, and in what communities across the state of Alaska that those loans were made.
Okay.
That seems like that could be information that could be shared without violating anybody's confidentiality.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Chair Sponholz, that is part of the RFP process, that they will be providing exactly those type of statistics that you just mentioned, and we'd be happy to report on those going forward.
Great. Thank you. All right. And let's move along with the presentation. And next up is Director Lori Wing-Hire for the third time.
Good afternoon, Chair Sponholz. Thank you for having me this afternoon. Before you is a slide that lists some of the, I think there's six bullets on it, that lists some of the accomplishments of the division during this pandemic over the last 6 weeks or so. I think some of this is pretty apparent. What we were trying to do is certainly protect consumers, and what could we do to make sure that they had access to health care, one, and not worry about their own costs, such as their out-of-pocket costs, for being tested for COVID-19. And in the beginning, we waived the respiratory illness diagnostic testing because we knew that physicians, primary care providers and such, were not necessarily be able to give a COVID test first thing. Very limited testing. They were starting with influenza, then they were doing a respiratory panel, and then COVID. So we were doing the waived the cost sharing for all of that. We then worked after your bill was signed by the governor in liberalizing telehealth to the fullest extent we could. And we worked with providers on this, not just to make sure that they could contact their patients or work with their patients, but also because so many were now forced into a telehealth situation that they were being compensated at a higher rate. There is a difference of what we pay for a brick-and-mortar rate as opposed to what we pay for telehealth. And to see that providers were not having to lay off more staff, we worked on the rates that they were being paid. Behind these other bullets that are there, we worked with insurers to say that when you did have layoff of employees, that if you wanted to, you could keep the employees on the employee benefit plan regardless of the hours that they worked. We thought that this was an important protection for consumers so that they were not forced into COBRA, which can be expensive, or into the individual market where they might not yet qualify for a subsidy. We worked with the property and casualty insurance to rewrite policies that were based on revenue or payroll to reflect what the current exposures were and adjust the premiums accordingly. We waived pre-authorizations and retrospective audits for healthcare providers so that they could concentrate on treating patients that were diagnosed with COVID and other patients and not worry so much about getting the paperwork done to the exact standard that we would expect in a normal time. This also goes to the fact that we waived all timelines necessary with billing for claims and appeals. The other thing that we did that is not on here but I think is a benefit is that the past 2 years, the division was awarded from CMS more money than we had anticipated in our reinsurance program. And, of course, our reinsurance program is what keeps the individual market stable, or it's reduced premiums over the last 3 or 4 years. We asked CMS if we could put that money, if necessary, into the 2020 program and the 2021 program so that if we saw that there was a huge amount of claims going to the insurers for COVID-19, that the members were not bearing the cost next year. This is particularly important to us because we think with the number of layoffs from businesses that we could see many of these people go from group health to individual markets. So we're working as hard as we can to keep those rates what they are or perhaps even less, taking into account the pandemic. Last but not least, we have provided on our website, which we have, the division does not usually post on the website, something that Aetna might send us or United Healthcare or Moda, but we are this time so that we could be a one-source stop for anyone wanting to know what their carrier was doing as respects COVID. But we also put up frequently asked questions and flyers, if you will, on travel insurance and pet insurance and other insurances that are being utilized or being looked at during this pandemic.
We're happy with the work that we've done, and I'd like to say we hope to continue. We certainly will, but we're hoping for a resolution that people can get back to work and that everyone is healthy and some of these measures aren't necessary going forward. And with that, Chair Sponholz, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Are there questions from the committee?
Yes, I have one. Andy Josephson.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Wingheyer, I carefully read the main guidance that the Treasury Secretary sent out, and the first thing that is listed is medical expenses. There's been a lot of discussion of how to interpret this, whether to interpret them broadly or narrowly. But for example, just reading one sentence, qualifying expenses would be medical expenses such as COVID-19-related expenses of public hospitals, clinics, and similar facilities. And I read that to mean that if a patient became unemployed, lost their insurance, and were wholly uninsured, we could use dollars, CARES dollars, to just pay the bill. Is that how you read that? And the reason I ask is there are some circumstances where we don't think we can come anywhere close to spending the money that we're authorized to spend because of restrictions. But I wanted to get your sense of that.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm certainly not an attorney on it, but I do know that CMS and the Trump administration has said that the cost for uninsured would be picked up, that they would be covered. If it's through the CARES Act or another funding mechanism, I couldn't tell you. But I do know that there has been talk that uninsured, the claims would be paid for.
Okay. People are going to be writing about this for years, so we'll see how it plays out. Thank you.
I agree with you, sir.
Are there additional questions from the committee? All right. If not, there's no other questions from the committee, I have a question. Can you unpack the issue of differing rates for telehealth that you described earlier?
Yes, Madam Chair. Telehealth, if your primary practice is telehealth, that you're sitting at an in-home office and providing counseling for mental health, let's say, there is a rate for that. But if you are now a primary care physician and you are doing telehealth from your home, because of COVID-19, because of social distancing, we thought, in knowing that these primary care and other practices still had the overhead, still had the staffing, even though they had been forced into a telehealth mode. So we looked at paying them a higher rate than we would a normal telehealth provider. And our emphasis was on to have them forced into more economic difficulty than having the non-essential surgeries canceled, the layoffs that we were seeing from some of the providers. We were hoping it would stabilize their balance sheet a little bit more and that they'd be able to come back with all their staff and make their payments as far as clinics and equipment and such going forward.
All right, thank you. That's very helpful. I think we're certainly seeing that Alaskan healthcare providers have moved very rapidly into offering telehealth, even those that were very reticent to use telehealth as a care delivery mechanism in the past have now jumped on the bandwagon. It's very exciting, and I appreciate the flexibility to allow those providers to still be able to bill at higher rates because they still have to pay for their nurses and in administrative office personnel. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about telehealth as it relates to the ERISA plans, which are, you know, federally regulated, can't be regulated at the state level. We have heard that there are some plans in the state of Alaska that are ERISA plans that are not covering telehealth, and I'm wondering if you've been having any discussions with the Trump administration or with our federal delegation about addressing that issue.
I have not, Madam Chair, I have not had discussions with either the Trump administration or with the congressional delegation on that. I do know that it is happening. We have had calls from members of trust and wanting to know why their benefits are not as broad as either what the insured market is or Alaska Care. The division worked very closely with the Medicaid, with the Alaska Care, Emily Ricci in the Department of Administration, Retirement and Benefits, and my folks, to make sure that what we were doing as closely as we could to each other, broadening coverages and waiving cost sharing, mimicking each other so that we were hitting the highest number of people that we could. But we do know, we know a lot of large employers then followed what we did, but we are aware that some of the trusts did not.
Yeah, we have definitely heard in our office from a few Alaskans who have had trouble getting coverage for their telehealth visits recently, and some of them have been able to go directly to their employers after being declined by their health plans, and their employers have reached out to the health plan administrators and had that
right.
and had that fixed. But it still seems that there's a few gaps out there that need to be addressed,
yes.
and it's probably a good idea for us to be reaching out to the Trump administration and our federal delegation on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Director Linghire? All right. Seeing none, we're going to move on to the next topic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Sarah Chambers. You on the line?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Sponholt. For the record, this is Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. Thank you for having me join the team today. I'm glad to tell you about what our division has been doing to mitigate the effects of COVID-19 in Alaska. We have been working with many of our 21 professional licensing boards to ensure continued access to healthcare services, as well as to relieve certain licensing requirements that have become impossible to attain during social distancing during the pandemic. We've been working with Unified Command on several of the governor's health mandates and on guidance that relates to professionals licensed under our division. And as you likely saw in the governor's press conference on order of suspension, almost all business licensing and primary corporate registration fees have been suspended. So far, in just a few weeks, that's resulted in more than 7,000 transactions that have been at no cost to the customer doing business here in Alaska. In addition, the order of suspension allows applicants and licensees to pay their professional licensing fees through formal interest-free payment agreements. So that's a really exciting opportunity for people to kind of find a way to make it through during this time if they're getting a new license or if they have a renewal that during this window. The division also launched many online applications that are brand new for professions under many boards. And for our telemedicine business registry, we made this a priority to allow quicker processing and online communication, not only when social distancing became a reality, not only for the applicants, but also for our division in reducing our mail handling and other things that would require us to be at the office. So that's really hastened an existing project, which is fantastic. We've issued three emergency orders to date. We've had one since the slide deck was created. One of these emergency orders extends, and this is just for the division. The boards will be on the next page. The division has extended the renewal deadline for certified nurse aides who were scheduled to renew March 31st, which was a terrible time, to late July. So giving them a little bit of breathing room to not worry about losing their jobs or meeting those last-minute requirements if they hadn't already gotten them in at the beginning of March. The next one establishes a payment extension for all consent agreements that were in good standing, and that extends the ability to pay your fines if you were found to have been issued a fine, to give you a little bit more time to pay those, not waiving them, but just extending the time frame. And then one is extending the life of nursing home administrator provisional licenses. Those typically, in statute, those expire after 6 months. And many of our licensing national tests are not being held. So we had several nursing homes that were in danger of losing their administrator, which is not what we want given COVID-19's focus on the elderly. So the governor suspended that law just during the emergency, and we extended that provisional license. We've also taken on collecting all of the violation complaints for COVID-19, really just as a courtesy to our sister agencies and Unified Command. We're taking those in through investigations@alaska.gov, which is our existing email address. And then twice weekly, we compile a spreadsheet that includes all of those complaints, and we peel out anything that we have authority to investigate in our existing statutory delegation, and then give the rest to Department of Law, and they have their own process for seeing what's, you know, frivolous, what's worth pursuing, what's important to get on immediately. And we're not involved with that process. Lastly, on this slide, the division created its own sort of one-stop shop COVID-19 information page for all 45 of our different professions and programs. And this lists all of the COVID-19 guidance produced by the division and the boards, and it links to national guidance and relevant health mandates, and then including subsequent profession-specific guidance that maybe people are kind of scrambling to find. So we're constantly refining and reorganizing, making sure that business people can, if they have a way to go through our office, if they have a need to work with us because of our oversight, that we make that easy for them to find.
Chair Sponholz, Representative Hannon.
Representative Hannon, you have a question?
I do. So through the chair, Ms. Chambers, my question is about the health mandate violation complaints that you've taken on for Unified Command, and I guess I'm looking for a little more detail. Are you just addressing business and professional alleged violations, or travel violations, for instance? And could you tell us the volume of complaints that have been received?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we offer to be a collection point for any complaint, because the public was really looking for a way to let someone know when they either had a question or saw something that didn't seem right or weren't sure. So we really just offered to we had a simple email address. We have professional investigators who could handle confidential information. So we're just collecting that information. We are screening it for anything that falls within Title VIII for professional licensing, in case there's anything that is within our jurisdiction. But most of these are things that, you know, we'll take whatever people send in. We're putting it on a spreadsheet, and we're sending the emails in the spreadsheet to law. And they're determining the best agency or entity to pursue those. So we are not really screening for what types of complaints. We're just collecting them as a courtesy to the public and then sending them to law. And we'd be happy to follow up with the information on the volume of complaints. In the last couple of weeks, it's over 1,000, but we can get that firm number for you as follow-up.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would expect, this is the chair, I would expect that you're going to see those complaint numbers go way high now in the coming weeks, because of businesses starting to open up, and there will be you know, confusion and concern. So I expect those numbers to dramatically increase. Do you know what Department of Law plans to do in terms of enforcement? I feel like there's been a little bit of ambiguity about enforcement of the health mandates and whether or not that's even the right thing to do.
Madam Chair, that's a great question. That would be an excellent question for the Department of Law to see how they're sort of triaging and prioritizing what may be really an important issue for public safety and health, and what's really just a neighbor complaining about another neighbor who's 4 feet instead of 6 feet away. And so, you know, we're getting all kinds of complaints. So that would be a great question for law. And again, we're just going to be investigating those types of things that we regularly investigate.
All right, thank you. And we don't have anybody with Department of Law with us today to be able to answer that question, but I think you sort of hit on what I was implying when I was describing sort of the scope of, you know, the range of complaints, because some of them will be about, you know, whether or not a business is operating or an individual licensee is operating, you know, in compliance with the law or the health mandates, or others will be just,
you know, folks policing their friends or neighbors and feeling frustrated and needing a place to have an outlet. And we obviously need to, you know, use some discretion and judgment about enforcement of those kinds of things. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree. That's the sense I've gotten. And so we want to make sure that we're educating our licensees about what the laws are, because the mandates are being updated as CDC guidance is being updated, and that's been our primary focus, is to make sure that our licensees understand the expectations, and then if those change, and I'm sure that someone from law would be happy to respond back to the committee with more information.
All right,
so the next slide is looking really at what our boards have been doing. And our boards, most of our boards, about half of them, or just over half, have really been working to quickly alleviate any health care as well as individual economic stress during the pandemic, much as we've heard from other divisions. We have hosted more than 30 open to the public board meetings through Zoom in this month alone, in April. It was unprecedented. We had about a board meeting a day, and it was extremely healthy and cost-effective way for our boards to be able to work through the first the closure of various businesses and professions of the state, and then as we're looking at reopening and working on phase one and the healthcare mandates, our boards being able to discuss not only as individual boards, but sort of cross-pollinate ideas among boards that are sympathetic to each other's professions. So we have a weekly board chair meeting that happens, so all of our healthcare board chairs can discuss their take and their interpretation, and how their, you know, massage therapists and chiropractors may, you know, need to understand each other's guidance if there are any differences, because they may be employed in the same office. As of yesterday, 11 of our professional licensing boards had taken 33 separate disaster mitigation related actions through emergency regulations or orders authorized under SB 241. So 30 board meetings, 33 separate actions just in April. And so they have been working to be very responsive and responsible. And you can see some of these examples on the slide. A wide variety of actions that boards have taken out of necessity. And you can see some of those: expanding services, addressing renewal requirements, when in-person requirements are being challenged by social distancing, how to ensure that regulations are accommodating alternatives so people can do things like get their prescriptions filled. We also have new emergency courtesy licenses or expedited licenses that were authorized under SB 241, which have been enacted by several boards. And many of those are particular to distance delivery of behavioral health, which speaks to what Director Ringheyer was mentioning, the transformation of telehealth. The medical board last night in a meeting voted to allow a loosening up the MAP controlled substance prescribing requirements at the request of several healthcare facilities. We've been working with Health and Social Services on that. So we are seeing needs and concerns, crises really popping up from all corners, and our boards are working to quickly address those. As it says on the slide, many boards have also altered their continuing education requirements if they renew this year, because in-person classes are difficult to find or attend. Sometimes some of the professions that offer CE continuing education have not developed online classes, so there are fewer of those available for certain professions. So, for example, the Board of Direct Entry Midwives will be allowing self-study continuing ed. Social work, excuse me, has reduced their required hours. Physical therapy and occupational therapy waived their requirements since they actually renew in June. So it would be impossible to finish off anything you were working on. And several have converted from in-person to distance delivery where that was restricted in regulation. So I'm really working with our boards to encourage them to use this time to evaluate whether any of these disaster-related amendments make sense as future permanent changes. It's a good opportunity for them to see that distance delivered can be as effective as in-person in many cases. So just to close, the actions of our division and the boards are our efforts to ensure that Alaskan professionals can maintain their licenses and continue working as we get through the pandemic, as well as to ensure that healthcare services are available to Alaskans.
All right. Thank you very much, Director Chambers. Are there any questions from the committee? All right. As there doesn't appear to be any questions, I just want to thank you. I know that you have been working very hard. 30 board meetings in a month is a lot of board meetings. I know your staff have been working their tails off. Not only have your boards, all of the people that are serving on boards are working very hard to try to respond in a COVID-19 informed way to make sure that Alaskans are safe, that they're getting the health care that they need, but also trying to find appropriate ways to reopen. I know I got my haircut yesterday, and I heard from my hairdresser about how, she sat in on an eight-hour board meeting last week and then got the, guidance from the board on Wednesday as to how it is that their establishment could reopen and operate safely. And that's a lot of practical work that has to be done. And I want to thank you and all of, the Alaskans that serve on your 17 boards for the incredible amount of time that you've been putting in try to ensure that we can be safe and respond and support also the modernization of our healthcare delivery system so that we can make sure that people are getting the healthcare that they need, but in a COVID-19 informed and safe way. So thank you very much to you, all of your team, and the volunteers who serve on boards across the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
Chair Sponholz?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Shall we continue with the next slide? This is Commissioner
Thank
Anderson.
You.
So on the next slide, we'll talk about the actions of the Community and Regional Affairs. They have created a COVID-19 resources for communities page on their website. This page includes a guide to useful COVID-19 resources for communities, guidance on creating worker mitigation plans, a link to the Alaska Municipal League's collected COVID-19 resources, information on emergency declarations for communities, links to the governor's COVID-19 health mandates, and direction on how to contact a local government specialist for assistance. These pages will be updated as more community and local government resources are identified. Additionally, as I spoke to earlier, the division is actively participating in weekly teleconferences with the Alaska Regional Development Organizations on economic impacts. And many rural communities have contacted this division with concerns about the availability of supplies necessary for local COVID-19 response. The local government specialist team has provided DHSS's resource request process for COVID-19 response and have also asked the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium for information about where rural communities can request supplies for quarantine facilities in their areas. ANTHC compiles a weekly list from tribal health organizations across the state. Further, DCRA staff contacted Samaritans First, who confirmed that they will be providing COVID-19 supplies to 8 rural communities, and I think you've seen that in the news. ANTHC is the state contact for information about deliveries and logistics. Just between April 9th and 15th, DCRA documented 157 COVID-19 related emails and calls from city and tribal governments in 97 communities throughout the state and 7 regional and state or federal agencies. Most of these inquiries were regarding travel bans, emergency declarations, resources for personal protective equipment and supplies, temporary changes in local administrative procedures, state mandates, COVID-19 funding, and the Family First Coronavirus Relief Act. As noted on the slide, DCRA was contacted by FEMA about their established COVID-19 Interagency Federal Partners Task Force. They are very new to this task force, but it's focusing on assisting Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho in recovery efforts and issues to encourage collaboration and support between the four states.
Are there any questions for Commissioner Anderson before we move on to the next slide? All right, we'll move on to the next slide, right. Commissioner.
Thank you. The Division of Banking and Securities took action quickly to ensure banks and credit unions were able to roll out the Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Development Loan Fund to Alaskan businesses as quickly and smoothly as possible. Reporting deadlines were extended. The requirement to obtain a branch license was waived for mortgage loan originators working from home, and information was provided on the division's website to assist bank and credit unions through this pandemic. Next slide. The Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, or AMCO, has remained busy throughout the pandemic. The Alcohol and Beverage Control Board passed a motion to allow distillers to produce non-potable ethanol alcohol for use in hand sanitizers. The board enacted emergency regulations allowing for curbside delivery of factory-sealed alcoholic beverages by seven alcohol license types, beverage dispensaries, restaurant eating places, breweries, brew pubs, distilleries, wineries, and package stores. The board also enacted emergency regulations allowing for home delivery of factory-sealed beer, wine, or cider by restaurant alcohol licensees when at least 33% of the order consists of food. The Marijuana Control Board enacted emergency regulations allowing qualified marijuana retail stores to provide curbside delivery of marijuana and marijuana products, as well as telephonic or online orders for the products, and enacted emergency regulations allowing for marijuana establishments to use commercial carriers to ship products in order to restrict the amount of time and exposure for staff during transport. Both boards opted to extend all TAPS alcohol service cards and marijuana handbags for me. The boards have opted not to suspend fees at this
Commissioner
time.
Anderson, you're getting a little bit muffled.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
The boards have opted not to suspend fees at this time due to the fact that both the alcohol and marijuana licensing programs are receipt supported, and suspending fees now would result in significantly higher fees next year, and the programs would end up going into financial crisis. However, the boards will revisit the idea if necessary as we move forward. Next slide. In these uncertain times, predicting what the future weeks and months will bring and what actions will be necessary for our department is difficult. The team is prepared to launch into action in whatever direction is necessary to best support Alaskan businesses and economy. Needless to say, we're getting good at shifting our focus quickly and effectively. I have nothing but admiration for the many members of our department. They've been putting in long hours, and they're very dedicated to serving Alaskans. As of right now, our future plans include continuing to work closely with our state and federal partners in many areas, including on the coordination for the economic mitigation and recovery programs and funds, and development and implementation of programs to help residents, small businesses, and industries. We will also continue to work closely with Alaska communities, community leaders, businesses, industry groups, other state of Alaska departments, as well as the Unified Command. More importantly, we will continue to search for additional funding assistance programs or options that can be made available to Alaska businesses. In the meantime, the Division of Economic Development and ADA will continue to issue loans to Alaskans through their existing programs. Additionally, as we discussed earlier, we are standing by to implement programs to disperse CARES Act small business relief funds as needed, as well as continue to work with communities and industry to help mitigate the impacts of this pandemic. Thank you very much for the time to present our activities with you. I would again like to thank the Commerce team for all their hard work, and as Chair Sponholz indicated, all of the volunteers that work closely with our department to help assist the individuals and businesses in Alaska during this difficult time. I look forward to working together with you to help Alaskans, and appreciate hearing your comments today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner Anderson. Are there additional questions or comments from members of the committee?
Chair Sponholz, this is Rep. Hannon.
All right. Go ahead, Rep. Hannon.
I just wanted to thank the commissioner and her team and the ADA staff. The diversity of programs that you manage are, one of those nexuses where your agency, who generally has fairly routine business of a regulatory nature to do, is taking on a Herculean task to help us keep Alaska's businesses able to function, and it's very much noticed, acknowledged, and appreciative. So thank you.
Rep. Sponholz, Rep. Story.
Go ahead, Rep. Story.
I too wanted to add my appreciation to everyone today for their hard work and for being responsive to community members' concerns in our businesses. It's critical at this time, and I am very appreciative, and I'm grateful for the actions that you are going forward with, too. Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions?
Through the chair, and as Madam Chair, excuse me, it's been a long day. I would like to thank everybody for their time.
I'm sorry, who is it that's speaking?
I'm sorry, this is Commissioner Anderson.
Oh, all right, go ahead, sorry.
Sorry. I would just like to thank everybody for those kind words, and I know that we're all working together and working very hard to make sure that we meet the needs of Alaskans. Thank you.
We are, and we very much do appreciate all the work that you and your team have been doing. This has been certainly a very trying time for everybody across the state, and you and the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development have a pretty key role in this. And I guess, you know, as sort of my parting comments, I would say, you know, in addition to my thanks to you and your team, I would, you know, encourage you to, you know, again, to consider looking at grants as well as expediting loans to small businesses, that we need to find ways to make sure that, small businesses across Alaska are held as close to economically harmless as they can, given the very generous provisions of the CARES Act federally. It looks like we have a lot of flexibility in, as to how those funds are distributed, particularly to small businesses. And, you know, if we can keep small businesses, in business this year, in spite of COVID-19, that will help our economy be stronger moving forward. We, heard. I think we got recently updated unemployment numbers, and about 72,000 Alaskans have filed for unemployment in the last 6 weeks, and that is, six times as many who filed for unemployment in our last recession. This is a really, really devastating time, and while we need to be smart and efficient and wise with our resources, we also need to do everything that we can to ensure that our small businesses and the economic diversity that we have built up over, the last 30 years is protected and preserved despite this incredible challenge that we're facing. And then, the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about is about the fact that, every one of your licensees and small business owners are also, essentially frontline workers in preventing the spread of COVID-19. And so if there is anything that you can do to help support and advise them as they work to try to very safely reopen Alaska, I think that that's really important. All of those businesses and all of those workers and licensees are people that can help us to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And the better job we do at preventing the spread, the more likely it is we will be able to maintain business openings as opposed to have to clamp back down. And I know that we all want, our business, our economy, and our communities to go back to as normal a life as we possibly can. But that can only be done if we are very, very smart and very careful about what it is that we're doing. And so if there are ways that you can provide training and get additional resources out to the businesses and licensees that you regulate about the health mandates and how it is that they can be a part of the solution, perhaps in partnership with the Department of Health and Social Services, I think that could be very helpful. We need, a whole wide range of soldiers all across as public health workers. I think we should call them everybody really at this point in time as a public health worker. If you operate a public space of any kind or a business of any kind that welcomes in patrons. So I think, try to harness the power of Alaskans if at all possible. With that, I want to thank everybody for your time and attention this afternoon. I know, Commissioner, you and your team have had a long day with multiple hearings. And with that, we're going to close out the House Labor and Commerce Committee at 4:56 p.m. Thank you very much, everybody.